Hello and welcome to Automators, the automation podcast where we talk about grabbing your technology and teaching it to do your bidding for you. My name is Rosemary Richard and I'm joined as always by my pal and co-host David Sparks. Hey David, how are you?
I'm great, Rose. I'm very excited. After this show publishes, I'm going to be seeing you the next day in London. So that's going to be really fun. I get to give you a hug and see you again. It's been so long.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time we saw each other in person? I think it was before COVID.
I think it may have been the WWDC before COVID. Yeah. You know, it's just one of those things when we're not flying back and forth around the world, it's kind of difficult to stay in touch in person. But at the same time, we managed to do a pretty good job of it online, which is always nice.
Yeah. Well, we're the Automators podcast where we like to talk about automation and we love the theme that anyone can automate. And I have been hearing from a listener over the last couple of years now, Kim Kaloka Madden, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So Kim and I started this email thread. I don't know how long ago it goes, Kim, but she would just send me ideas and things she was doing as a mom with automation. And as the months and years went by, these automations got more and more complex and cool. And at some point I said, Kim, you have to come on the Automators and share all this with us. And she was so kind to do it. So welcome to the show, Kim.
Yeah, thanks so much. You know, what happened was I kept listening to Automators and learning more and more and got better at my automation. So that's how they got more fancy.
That's what we want. That's exactly the goal. But Kim, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a work from home mom. So I started a business for myself after I divorced my now ex-husband, and I had a 3-year-old who I was a stay-at-home mom, and I didn't want to put him in daycare, and I wanted to spend as much time with him as I could. So I had started a little business from my home doing virtual assisting, administrative support for people who have online businesses, and learning as I went through that, I started to get into automation, a lot of web-based automation, email marketing automation, things like that. And then, you know, as my business grew, so did my family. I got remarried, had another child. So we have a big 8-year age gap, which keeps life really interesting, having a teenager and a 6-year-old in the house. And when I'm not running my business, I'm chasing them around or wrangling our dogs and cats.
And automating.
And automating. Automating as much as I can.
I think it's one of those things where you, you know, once you realize that something you're doing, you know, you can make it a little bit easier for yourself or a little bit faster. Most people are inclined to go that way. So I'm glad to hear that you recognize that as an automation or that there was automation for a lot of this stuff, because things like email newsletters and so on, a lot of that system, you know, that does run, you know, with a bunch of automation, but that tends to be on the other side to the people who are sending the emails. You know, the people who are sending the emails kind of, you know, only ever think about, you know, just writing the content and doing things. So I'm glad that you saw things like that, and you know you started with the small stuff, and it seems like you've learned and improved as you've gone along.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, if necessity is the mother of invention, I only had so much time that I could work, and I was trying to work around my kids' schedules. And I realized that the more I could automate, the more I could free up my time to be able to be there for them. So, and also eliminate room for a lot of errors. You know, if I got interrupted, if something is automated, there's less chance that I'm going to make a mistake in the process.
Yeah, that's the thing people forget. I mean, it's faster, but it's also more consistent when you build automations. But you didn't just learn to use automation to help around the house. You also kind of folded it into your business at kimkaloka.com. where you call yourself a systems and automation strategist.
Yep, that's what I do. So my clients, you know, it first started out with giving me more time, but then with my clients, I realized that what I could do in their businesses is help them to be more scalable. So when things were automated, it made it, you know, it gives them more room to be able to grow their business faster and in a more sustainable way so that they can serve more clients without necessarily having to bring on a lot more team or do a lot more manual labor to get people into their, you know, membership programs or group coaching programs and things like that.
Yeah. And you know, the internet is ripe with automation for that type of work now. We cover internet automation often on the show, and I feel like that's probably something you could talk about. Maybe I'll have to have you back in a future day to talk about that. But today I would really like to kind of talk about the automation you're doing around the house, because I think all of us are looking for ways to improve that stuff.
Yeah, so it started with using signals. So Rosemary, I credit this to you because you talked so much about this with using the signals for iPhone, where you that is the name of the app, right? Mm.
but
different colored flashing light combinations. So my 14-year-old can go in his room and he likes to be in there playing on his Steam Deck or on his Switch and hanging out with his friends on FaceTime calls. And it's got increasingly more difficult to get his attention to come out and do things like eat dinner or take out the trash. And so I started to have, I put smart bulbs in his room and I set up automation. So like, you know, I could push a button and it would change his lights to a certain color. Like it would turn his lights green when it was time to come eat dinner. And then it would, you know, I would use push cut and 5 minutes later, send him a text that's like, okay, I changed your lights 5 minutes ago. Now it's time to come eat. And then, you know, there was different ones where I would tell him, okay, like it's time for bed. It's time to come do this chore. So I set up a lot of automations for that, that were just kind of like flashing his lights to get his attention.
And I bet, you know, teens probably like that more than you actually talking to them. They want to disambiguate the parents as much as possible. So I can see the advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think sometimes it helps.
Also, it means you're not competing with the headphones or whatever it is. You know, it's coming in a way that's, you know, going to interrupt what he's doing without competing with what he's doing directly, which is really smart.
Right. Well, and that's part of why my automations have had to get more complicated is I've had to work harder to get his attention through the headphones.
All right. So let's break that one down a bit. What are the specific steps you're taking to make all that happen? The light flash and the 5 minute warning.
So with the light flash and the 5 minute warning, there's a shortcut that I set up. So there's two different shortcuts that I set up. And the first one flashes the lights or changes the light color. And it sends a signal off to push cut that says, okay, run this shortcut in 5 minutes. And so then it runs a second shortcut that sends him a text that's like, okay, now it's dinner time. And I think it changes the lights to a different color at that time, or I can't remember. It's been set up for so long that I can't remember exactly. But yeah, so it's a shortcut that initially triggers it, changes the lights, and tells push cut, wait 5 minutes, and then run this other shortcut.
Yeah, that's pretty simple.
I like it. You know,
and it works, right?
Yeah.
The trick is to make sure he keeps the light turned on.
Right. Well, the light turned on is fine. It's the HomePod mini that's in his room that often mysteriously seems to get unplugged.
Oh.
Yeah, because that one I can broadcast my voice, or I use the intercom feature and I have a list of prompts. So I'll have a shortcut that I run that speaks into my child's room and says, it's time to come clean the cat boxes, or it's time to come take out the trash. So I have a list of options. When I run the shortcut, it says, which thing do you want to intercom? Or it has a text input, so I can type something in and then run it that way.
You know, I think a lot of people have HomePods but don't use the intercom feature. And it kind of snuck into the system several years ago. I know I didn't use it for the first year or two, and then I kind of discovered it, and I find it really useful. I mean, I think it's kind of cool that you can talk into the rooms of the kids, and it's not as intrusive again. But it is a way to get a message out. And my wife and I even use them between each other. Explain a little bit how you set that up, and for people who have HomePods and aren't using it, how to get started.
So I'll start with setting up a shortcut. And in the shortcut, I'll add an action that is just, you can only do it on your phone. Unfortunately, I really wish I could run this shortcut from shortcuts on my Mac. But you have to do it from your phone, and I have it. So the first step is choose from menu, and then I put in my options, and then I put in the text for each option. So I have a text box that says, you know, come eat, come empty the dish rack, and so on. And then the text one actually opens up a text prompt, so I can put in something else that's not one of the usual things that I send in. The other thing that I have in this automation as a backup, in case he has unplugged the HomePod or he's ignoring it, is it also sends a text with whatever. So it sends them a text with whatever I have just put in as the input. And then it also intercoms that into the bedroom and changes their light.
Teenagers. Sometimes it takes a little extra work.
Oh, yeah.
Have you played at all with doing the intercom to people's devices? Because this is something that, I mean, I don't have other people in my home with my HomePod, so it's kind of difficult for me to experiment with this. I can have a really great conversation with myself if I really want to, but it's kind of pointless to intercom myself. But I know that intercom does have a feature where you can have the intercom go to people's specific devices as well.
Like to his
and then
phone
that
or his
person control.
MacBook?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I believe it's only iPhones and Apple Watches that it will go to as well. Yeah, there's the option. I believe it is under in the Home app. If you go into the Home settings, I think it is. And then under Intercom. Yeah, I can see receive notifications whenever, when I'm at home or anywhere. And I can turn it on and off for all the people because, of course, I'm an admin of my home. But yeah, that means that the Intercom notifications can go to people. But I'm not entirely certain how well that interacts with the Shortcuts Intercom feature, because that to me seemed very much like it was designed for either going to like the whole home or just to like specific rooms or areas. And so I think you'd have to intercom it to everywhere and then it would go to the people through Shortcuts.
Oh, that's really interesting. I'm going to have to play with that.
But I also actually think the text message might be the more elegant solution there in the sense, though, because it does target him. And one thing, you know, young people are wired to is to check their messages, you know, so I think it gets through. But you don't just have it turn green when it's time for dinner. You've gone next level with this, right?
Right. So I have it turn green when it's time for dinner. I have other colors for different tasks. For my six-year-old, one really fun one that I've done is he likes to have this little dance party. So in my bedroom, I'll have the lights just go on in signals. I'll have it do the spectrum effect.
Yeah.
And I'll have that repeat like 10 times. So, and he just loves that. Like I push the button and it makes the lights go rainbow and he just kind of goes crazy having a little dance party in my room. So it's really fun to be able to make that kind of magic for him. The other thing I use for him is where if I'm coming in for bedtime from my desk, I'll have I meticulously track my time. So when I change my timery tracking, it turns off my work timer, turns on my kid's bedtime timer, and it asks me if it's time for snuggles or not with because my little one loves to do chair snuggles in our recliner at night.
Yeah.
And so when I go in the house, I'll have the HomePod intercom programmed to say it's time for chair snuggles. And to my little one, who doesn't realize that's because I'm pushing a button to make it say that, he's like, oh, Siri said it's time for chair snuggles.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, push that button as often as you can. Before you know it, he'll be in college and just asking you for money.
Right.
And then you have the one, you also have another one, the emergency break glass one. Tell us about that one.
Oh, right. So when the 14-year-old is successfully ignoring all of the signals that I'm sending to him, there's one sort of mother of all shortcuts that I've made to be just intensely funny and annoying. So I have it flash his lights in his room. Siri will go off on a repeat with have you ever heard the song that never ends? Like, this is the song that never ends.
Yeah, yeah.
Just goes on and on, my friend. So yeah. I have that loop on repeat a few different times. Meanwhile, all of his lights are flashing and, I think that's the gist of it, but that's really annoying enough where if I tell him, hey, I'm going to run the annoying timer if you keep ignoring this, that usually is enough to stop him. And the couple of times that I've had to run it, it's been, he's been very irritated, but also it's been funny. So I don't try to overuse that one.
Sure, sure. But I was just thinking, like, I used to have trouble getting my kids out of bed. I could see, like, putting something together like that. And then I'd put, like, a kill button, like, in the mm-hmm. bathroom. So it would just go off until they got out of bed and went to the bathroom and they pushed the button. That would be another nerdy way as a parent to get them out of bed.
Yeah.
as an adult who struggles with getting out of bed, home automation is absolutely the best solution for that for me. Like, my alarm goes off in the morning, the blind goes up, the blackout curtains open, the lights turn on. Like, it doesn't completely fix the problem, but it makes it a darn sight harder to just ignore the fact that it is time to get up and do things because there is all of the light suddenly. I don't yet have the button where it will, you know, it'll play sound until I go and press the button in the bathroom, because I'm frankly not quite sure how I would do that, because I know, like, for whatever speaker system, like, there are going to be other ways around turning that off. For me, because, you know, I know how to do it. I also know that a cat can indeed turn on music on a HomePod with their tail if they try hard enough. So, you know, there's ways around a lot of this stuff. But yeah, I think the emergency break glass automation in particular, it's nice to have in your back pocket if you ever need it. And hopefully, you know, hopefully you don't need it all that often.
Right. We've got to get you that alarm clock that, like, jumps off the nightstand and goes under your bed until you get it.
Yeah. If I had a bed that things could go under. Yeah. Oh, I remember those kids' toys where it was like a little fairy and you had like a part that you held in your hand and then you pulled a cord and it would like send the little doll flying up really high with like a four petal plastic skirt or something. Something like that is an alarm clock. There's not really a good place in my bedroom because my room is very small. My entire apartment is very small. I feel like, you know, that sort of thing isn't going to work super well where I am. But opening the curtains and turning on all the lights and things like that works pretty well as a basis for me.
Yeah, there's another one. I think it's still on Amazon. I'll have to look for it. It has a propeller on it. And when the alarm goes off, it winds up the propeller and it flies off into the room somewhere. And the alarm won't turn off until you go find the propeller and put it back on top of the alarm. So there's all sorts of ways to do that. I tell you, I've never really had a problem getting out of bed, but I do get to bed early enough. That's the trick, right? Get enough sleep. That's the ultimate automation tip, is get enough sleep.
Well, I was just going to say that getting my kid to get to bed and get enough sleep, because, you know, as an adult, I want to go to bed sometimes, but I can't go to bed until I get him to bed. So that's where some of these shortcuts have come in. Is trying to cut off the fun so that he has to stop and go to bed, because it's just not worth it to try to stay up anymore.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, there's so much science behind that with screens and stuff to kind of like disengage them.
This episode of Automators is brought to you by ExpressVPN. In the real world, if you're looking for privacy, you close a door. But online, we leave doors open everywhere we go. Using the internet without using ExpressVPN is like never closing doors behind you. Because all of your traffic flows through their servers, internet service providers, including mobile network providers, know every single website you visit. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure, encrypted servers, so your ISP can't see your browsing history. There are loads of reasons to choose ExpressVPN. It hides your IP address, which makes it extremely difficult for third parties to track your online activity. Plus, it's easy to use. Just fire up the app and click one button to get protected. And it works on all devices, phones, laptops, tablets, and more, so you can stay private on the go. And it's easy to see why it's rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. I've used ExpressVPN a number of times, and often it's a really great way to get around a limitation on a network that doesn't need to be there. For example, not allowing me to visit a website that they don't know the domain of. And it's also quite important to me to use ExpressVPN so that I can actually access the content that I've been watching online. So if I'm traveling, then I can continue to watch things that are available to me when I'm at home. Protect your privacy online today by visiting expressvpn.com/automators. That's expressvpn.com/automators, and you can get an extra 3 months free of ExpressVPN. expressvpn.com/automators. Our thanks to ExpressVPN for their support of this show and all of Relay FM.
Kim, you've got a series of shortcuts that you call bark and, well, screen time, I understand, right? You know, screen time with kids is something that we should figure out as parents. But what is the bark automation?
Yeah, so bark is this device that I got that my child absolutely loathes, but it's plugged into my home network. So basically at the point of my router, this little device is plugged in. And I assign devices in the house to different users so that my child, his devices are, you know, they're kind of monitored his internet activity by this device. It's a safety
It's like a, it's like a blocker, a CDN blocker. So it doesn't, or what is it? The, DNS blocker, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has an app, but they don't have any shortcuts automation. And, you know, if anyone working at Bark is listening to this and wants to talk to me about some automation ideas, some shortcuts ideas, I'm happy to have a conversation. but basically, because I couldn't automate anything in the app, again, I had to invent ways to sort of build in some automation around it. And, you know, sometimes my kid would text me asking for time and I would either add the time and forget to reply, or I would reply, but I would forget to add the time. So what I've done is I made it so that I push a shortcut. It texts and lets him know that I've received his request for time and that I'm adding the time. And then it opens the Bark app so that I can then go in and add the time without forgetting. And, you know, this is another one of those, this is like an ADHD thing as well, because I just get so distracted with all the things I have going on.
That's really smart. I really like that.
Yeah. And what I've also done with it is, because, you know, it's the only way I can sometimes motivate him to do the things that he needs to do around the house is with that screen time as an incentive. So I have a list of, like, I have a reminders list that I keep that has his chores in it. And when I open the shortcut, it picks, okay, what's the next thing that he needs to do? So then it asks me, okay, pick the thing he needs to do next. And again, this is a shortcut that triggers another shortcut with push cut. So I select the item and it says, okay, I'm adding time now. Please make sure that you do X, Y, Z before you ask for more time. And then it triggers a push cut shortcut to after the time runs out, because sometimes if I've told him there's something he needs to do after his time runs out, he'll conveniently, once his time runs out, he'll just not ask for more time because he doesn't want to alert me to remind me that it's time for him to do something. So it sends a text that says, okay, time's up. Remember, it's time to do X, Y, Z. And it pulls that from the shortcut. So it's like there's a data jar variable that's storing what the thing is that I've asked him to do. And then it calls back on that variable and says, hey, remember, I added time an hour ago, and now it's time to do this thing that I asked you to do.
Well, two observations. The first is it sounds like push cut is really key to your workflow for a lot of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, big time.
And the second is, you know, when kids are sitting around talking about how they defeat their parents' efforts to keep them off the internet, your child, he has a tale of woe for his friends, because it seems like you've got it all locked in. Good for you. Good for you. Why did you decide on the Bark device? I mean, you're pretty clever. There's a lot of software DNS blocking services out there. What landed you on this one?
Well, I did a lot of research and I tried a few different apps before I went with the actual device. The thing I liked about the Bark is that, A, it gives him a lot of privacy because I really respect his right to privacy. But it also, it's a really safety-minded device. So it will kind of read his text messages, and it'll only, and his, you know, things like the thing I get the most is Spotify notifications for some questionable lyrics and things that he's listening to. But for the most part, the Bark is intended for safety. So it flags the parents and says, hey, you might want to talk with your child because we noticed a text message that came through, you know, and it's kind of geared towards grooming and things like that, that are just things that you really don't want your child to become a victim of without even realizing what's happening.
Yeah.
And so that was my thing, because he's on YouTube a lot. And I can see value in what he's doing because he looks up things like how to speed run games or how to create a glitch or he also is learning how to code on Scratch. So he looks up videos on how to code different things. He wants to be a developer. And I wanted a way to give him some freedom to be able to do that, but also to make sure that I knew that he was safe and he wasn't going down any weird rabbit holes. And I felt like the Bark was the option that gave me the most of that.
Well, it's an interesting device. I'd never heard of it before, but this looks very attractive to me. And I feel like any parents out there should check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think the whole setup that you've got there is, you know, it's very smart, because I do a very similar thing to you, where you've got, you know, the shortcut which sends a message saying that you're adding the time, and then opens the Bark app. Whenever I open Safari on my iPhone, it opens a new tab to DuckDuckGo, because otherwise I'll tap on Safari to go and Google the thing that I've just, you know, thought about or whatever, and then I will get distracted by whatever previously open tab was in there. And I found that just pushing myself into the app, into the right app, helping the right thing into my face at the right time is incredibly useful for me. I think that sort of thing, you know, it's really smart. I am going to ask a question, and this is not a criticism, it's a curiosity. Have you ever had it where your child has checked off the task that they were supposed to do in reminders by the time that their time runs out on the internet? And is that something that you've accounted for with the shortcut that runs whenever their internet time request runs out?
No, I would love for that to happen. I have not been able to get him to have that level of initiative. I've tried setting a reminders list for him. I've got him in Asana. I created an Asana project for our home, and I've got tasks for him in Asana. I've got tasks for my husband in Asana, and I can't get anybody else to use the stuff. So it's more like, check in with me, let me know it's done. But that would be lovely if I could get him to check it off and have it automatically give him screen time.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I was just wondering if this was ever a thing that had happened to you, because I know that happens to me sometimes. I'll set a reminder for myself to do something for like in an hour, and then I'll get the reminder and be like, well, I already did that, and ignore the other six reminders of things that I haven't done. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I mean, I know it's tough, though, when you're raising kids, because you do want to give them independence. I mean, when I was young, we didn't have cell phones or pagers or anything. We went out on our bikes. Nobody knew where we were, and we did our thing. And I feel like that's part of growing up. So you definitely want to give them that freedom. But we live in this world where there's all these risks that, especially with the internet, that a lot of parents aren't aware of. So I think you're doing a good job. I mean, I don't know where the line is, but at least you're bringing intentionality. I have the same struggle with my kids. My kids are grown up. But we are all on Find Friends, and I'm very careful. I tell them, I never check where you are. The purpose of Find Friends is if nobody knows where you are and there's a problem, it's not for me to keep track of you when you go on a date or whatever. But it's hard to find that middle ground. And I do appreciate the effort you're making on this.
Yeah. I know as a kid that I would just watch TV a lot. I didn't have access to the kinds of things that he has. But then again, he doesn't have the option of watching TV because we don't have cable and channels and things that are entertaining for him.
Yeah.
So it's really in a Wild West kind of new frontier with figuring out these things.
Yeah, definitely is. But at the same time, it sounds like he's been a good inspiration for you for automation. And also, you know, if he's learning to code for himself, then I'm sure he'll be automating his requests to get more internet time at some point in the future.
I'm sure.
Hopefully he just remembers to add the reminders of the thing that he's supposed to do before he asks for more time.
Yeah, I could foresee a cat and mouse game going on in the Kaluka Madden house as he gets better at coding and figuring out ways around your systems, and you find out ways around his systems.
Yep. Oh man, when I got the Bark, he was not happy with that at first. I had to get a box to go around it to keep him from unplugging it. I had to get one of those clear plastic lock boxes. So that was a struggle.
Yeah.
But he's gotten used to it, and we've got a good rhythm, and he knows he can trust me. He knows I'm not unreasonable, that if he asks for time and it makes sense to give him time as long as things are done and he's healthy about it, then it's fine.
Well, I ran DNS blocking throughout my children's, I mean, the whole run. And we had the house. We always wanted our house to be the one that all the kids came to. So we'd always have chips and drinks and things that they would want, you know? But they all knew that at the Sparks house, you weren't going to get very far on the internet, because I had a pretty hard lockdown on where you could go. And, And you know, I didn't, you know, it was easy for me because I don't go to those sites. So it's really easy. I just locked it down for the whole house, and then there was not a problem.
Well, this is one of those things where Bark really helps, because even though I probably could figure out how to do that stuff, I'm pretty savvy, but I'm not super great at that coding and kind of back end languagey stuff. So the Bark just makes it like it's a no brainer.
It's an automation in itself, isn't it? Knowing when to not invest the time in doing something yourself and just farm it out to another service or another device. And, and also with your shortcut, you know, you can't solve the whole problem with automating stuff in the Bark app, but you know, you're giving yourself the kick off, and I feel like that's a lesson that people can really should really learn. You know, you don't necessarily have to automate the whole thing; just automate as much as you can of it, and then you know, or as many chunks as you can. And if you have to stitch the rest together by hand for the meantime, then that's okay. It's still an automation, and if it's making your life easier, it's worth it.
Yep.
You've got any automations you're working on right now or things you're thinking about for the future that you haven't built yet?
So, yeah, we have lots of smart plugs and smart light bulbs. I don't have, even though we're homeowners, my house is older, so we don't have central air conditioning, and we haven't installed a lot of, we haven't actually installed any smart switches or anything, although I did just order some on a Prime Day deal. But we did smart plugs and plugged in the Christmas lights to them so that we could put them basically just on a timer in the home app on an automation. But my 6-year-old, what I noticed is we weren't using it because he likes to turn on the Christmas lights. So we would have him turn it on instead of just being it on the automation. And so I was thinking that for next year, mm-hmm. we could have it say, and I borrow this from you, "Hey, Apple Lady, Merry Christmas." And that way the HomePod can turn on the Christmas tree or the outside lights or anything like that. So that's one idea I have for a little bit of magic for this holiday season.
Yeah. And that's a fairly simple one.
Yeah. And then, you know, if for some reason, you know, you're not at home or something and therefore the lights aren't on, then you can have, you know, an automation turn them on by using the condition of, you know, nobody's at home or something like that, so that you still get the lights when you arrive home. And then, you know, they can turn off maybe like 5 minutes after you arrive home or something. And then your 6-year-old gets the joy of turning them on. I like that solution. That's nice.
Yeah, and right now being in the joys of summer, I'm figuring out my air conditioning automation. So this is one I just put on my Instagram that, you know, you just because you don't have central air conditioning doesn't mean that you can't sort of have your house kind of run on a thermostat situation. So I have my air conditioning units, my wall units, plugged into smart plugs. So basically I just turn the air conditioner on to whatever degree I want the setting to be on the thermostat on the air conditioner, leave it turned on and plugged into a smart plug, and then control the on and off of the air conditioner with the smart plug. So I have mm-hmm. conditions on those to come on at certain times of day or turn off at certain times of day. And now I'm experimenting with, okay, what temperature does it need to be? What temperature does the HomePod sensor need to hit in order for this window unit to need to come on? The one that I really don't like to use because it's so loud, but it's better than having the house get too warm. So that's what I'm kind of working on, is setting up the automation so that I'm hopefully not running all kind of 5 or 6 air conditioning units I have here at the same time, but toggling them on and off to get the house to like the right temperature at the right time.
Yeah. So you've just got, I'm guessing, the dumbest air conditioning units you can get, where there's like a physical switch to turn them on, and that same physical switch just stays on when they get turned off.
Yep.
And is that how you're doing that?
Yeah.
Okay. That's smart. I always think that the best thing to do with some devices is just, you know, either you have to invest the money to go on the really smart ones, or you need to, you know, buy the cheapest one and use your smarts to automate it. Because automating hardware in particular for smart home stuff can be, it's a tricky balance of finding the right thing that solves the problem in a way that doesn't end up, you know, annoying you in some way or causing some kind of limitation which isn't pleasant to live with. So I approve. I did something similar with my dehumidifier before I finally found a smart one that I was willing to work with to get it into my home automation system.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Kim, one of the things I noticed you popped into the show notes for us is a little topic called automation bridges. And I love this idea because, you know, it's sometimes, you know, difficult to figure out how to get from A to B just in general. And then when you add the automation layer on top of it, that's kind of tricky. So how are you bridging some of these things together?
Yeah. So this idea kind of comes, it's similar to that automation I did with the bark, where I realized I couldn't automate the bark itself, but I could automate a piece of it and, you know, sort of bridge the gap, like I said. You know, there's a lot of things that I can do in, let's say, for example, Zapier versus Make, or formerly known as IntegraMAT. So there's some things I can do in Zapier that I can't do in Make, and there's some things I can do in Make that I can't do in Zapier. So what I'll do is I will send a webhook trigger in Zapier. So I'll trigger the action, the automation off in Zapier, and then I will have that do the couple things that I need it to do in Zapier, and then pass the automation, the rest of the task, over to Make to finish off the automation. Another thing is I do have a Stream Deck on my desk, and I cannot for the life of me get this tedious task I have to do for my client of Facebook ads reporting. So I'll go into the ads manager, I'll grab all of the numbers that I need to sort of click, highlight each of them and copy them. And then I go over to my spreadsheet where I have to enter them, and I press a button on my Stream Deck that will paste them all into the spreadsheet. So it just automatically, boom, 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 copies, tabs over, and pastes all of the numbers over. And I swear that little shortcut is so handy for me. I actually took my Stream Deck on vacation because I was like, okay, I still have to do this ads reporting while we're out of town, and I'm taking my Stream Deck to plug into my laptop because I cannot stand to do this task without being able to push a button and paste in those four numbers however many times I have to do it.
Hey, you know, it's funny because you can always put that stuff on keyboard shortcuts, but there's something about those Stream Deck buttons that is very attractive for automation.
Oh, yeah. I used to do it with a keyboard maestro shortcut. Like, I would just type in the shortcut, but the pushing the button is just, it feels like, yep, there, it's doing it for me. I'm not typing in something to make it happen.
Can I wind back, though, about Zapier and Make? Because I feel like a lot of people are curious about this stuff, but they get hung up. And I know that you use it a lot kind of for your day job work. What are some examples of the automations you're running through Zapier and Make?
So one example I have, one of the clients I was talking about earlier with scaling her business, she runs a small group coaching program. And it used to be her just teaching the classes. So there was one coach, you know, three different times on one day. And people would sign up for one of those times. Well, as she's grown her business, she has hired a team of coaches. And so now there are four coaches, and people can pick, you know, Leanne on Tuesday or Diana on Wednesday. And there's Wednesday at noon, and there's Wednesday at 7:30. And getting people to be able to choose a day and time of a class and sign up for it and get the correct information turned out to be a bit of a beast. So I would program those into Airtable with the different classes that are led by the different coaches. And then when they purchase that product, so if they go and they sign up for the class that's Leanne on Tuesday at 12, they get popped into a webhook that searches an Airtable list that I have. And that list has everything they need. So it has their Zoom link. It has the day and time of their class. It has all of the dates of their sessions. And so that then automates the client receiving all of that information in an email, and in their membership area displays also. So like when they log into their members area, it shows their coach, their day, their time. And it shows that individually for each of the clients who signs up for the group coaching program. And there's about 180 to 250 people who sign up for each of these. So there's, you know, 10 to 15 classes that I'm managing that way. And Airtable and Zapier are doing a lot of lifting that we used to have to do manually with plugging that information in.
Yeah, I can just imagine if somebody got the wrong Zoom link for something like that, it would be a very understandable human error on the part of the people sending that link that, you know, there's, you know, 10 different Zoom links. Of course, you know, sometimes somebody would get the wrong one, but by using the automation, that's not a problem. I'm guessing it has also possibly cut down on the number of emails going, hey, I don't have the information yet, that people would be expecting to receive probably very quickly.
Right.
As soon as they've gone signed up for everything, because usually when you sign up for things, you know, it's automated. There's an immediate response that says, hey, thanks for your email, or thanks for your request, we'll do something. So, you know, you've you've handed all that off to the systems, which sounds pretty cool. And I'm glad to hear that there's somebody else using Airtable, because I do love that app so much.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, and it's kind of been a multiple pass thing. You know, at first I used Airtable to just create the Zoom links. And then I used Airtable to determine the dates of the sessions. Like, okay, if the first session is on this day, what are the next sessions? And then, you know, it's just as every time we run it, there's another pass at it where I'm like, okay, what can I automate about it this time that makes life easier and makes the client experience, which is the more important thing, truly, the user experience more seamless and more enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. Automation evolution is definitely something that is, I think, the best approach, because it's so tempting to try and just come up with the perfect all-in-one solution from the beginning. But by starting with, you know, I'll just do this bit, and then you add a bit more and bit more as your automation evolves and as you evolve as an automator, I feel like you end up finding better solutions for things as time goes on, instead of if you just sat down and tried really hard to figure out, you know, from start to finish, right at the beginning, what would it look like and how should it work? I feel like you can come up with better solutions that are easier as well by doing that. So I'm very glad to hear that you've been, you know, taking multiple passes at things.
Yeah, it's definitely the elephant one bite at a time. And that also gives me time to learn how to manage it if something goes wrong. Because if I try to automate too much at once and then something goes wrong and it's ricocheting throughout the automation, that's really terrifying and stressful. But if I just automate a small piece, make sure that works well, then I can move on to something else.
And that really works with this idea of bridging automation that you were talking about, because by bridging automation, you're building small pieces of it. And then maybe you come back in a few months and say, okay, well, I've got this piece of it mastered. Now can I master the generation of the spreadsheet or the booking of the meeting? Or, you know, you can add pieces to it, and you've already got the one piece locked down, and the bridge just gets longer, right? And before you know it, you've automated the whole process.
Yeah, it's like automating Legos.
Yeah. Well, I like to use the Lego analogy with automation, because it's just so visual. But it's true.
And also, by chunking things, if something goes wrong, it's very likely to only be a chunk that goes wrong. So there'll only be a chunk that needs to be done manually or fixed before, you know, the next chunk can then pick it up and do things. You know, it's sometimes a little difficult to get things set up so that, you know, they can take input from here or from there. But usually there's a way around it. And one of the things I really like with Make is if one of the scenarios, that's what an automation solution in Make is called, a scenario, if it goes wrong, and it turns off webhooks in particular, it will queue the backlog. And so then you can look at it and see why it's gone wrong and tweak it and fix it, and then rerun it, including all the backlog. So it's not just dropped everything on the floor and gone, I don't know what to do with that, good luck. You know, you're not completely stuck, which I think is a really nice benefit, especially when you're just getting things figured out.
Yeah. I'm just starting to get a little bit more into Make. I've just started in the past few months running more automations through Make. And I do like that. I'm trying to get the hang of that piece in particular.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. I like the visual aspect of it in particular. I don't know if that works well for you. I find that the fact that it's just very pretty in some ways, with all the circles, the bridges, you know, tying things together, it works very well for me.
Are either of you using If This Then That at this point?
I started out using If This Then That, and I don't think anything is currently actively running on mine. I do have some recipes set up, and they might just be feeding into something so old I haven't even looked at it in a while.
Yeah, the one that keeps me in that, because I'm using all three of them, like, guys, I can't help myself, but they've got the day one trigger. And If This Then That, and I like day one.
Yeah.
And there's so much you can feed it through their service. I wish that some of these other competing services would also get a day one action.
Oh, you know what? Come to think of it, that is one that I'm using is actually a day one, because I have an If This Then That recipe that pulls my rescue time. So it tracks how much time I spent on my phone and on my computer and my sleep from my my auto sleep app, and it puts those into a day one journal entry. So I have like a a day one journal that just has how much time I spent on my computer and how much time I spent sleeping, which are kind of my two primary metrics in life right now.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I have If This and That accounts. So I just checked and my applets are all currently disabled because I can do everything that I was doing in If This and That in Make and Zapier. And one thing about Make in particular is it's very easy for, well, very easy. Developers can create their own integrations. It's not up to Make to do the whole thing. You know, the developer can provide them with the data because that's what we did for Pushcut. And that's, you know, how we update things to make sure that all of the things, all of the new options stay available. So day one probably could integrate with Make and Zapier if they wanted to. I'm guessing they just don't have the resources within their team to be able to do that at the moment because it will be another thing to maintain on top of the app itself, which is already pretty awesome.
I get the impression, Rose, that you primarily use Make at this point, right?
Yeah. I just ended up, it's one of those things. I don't mind using all of the automation solutions. But the problem with using all of the automation solutions is then you have to remember where this thing is happening if something is for some reason not happening or not quite working the same way. And as much as I do my best to document my things for myself of, hey, I've got these automations running here and those automations running there, at some point, inevitably, I will change something and forget to update my documentation. And then I'll be going and I'll be looking at Zapier going, well, I can't see why this is going wrong. Everything seems fine. And it turns out that it's in Make or vice versa. So I have done my best to consolidate as many things into Make as I can, just because that ends up working nicely for me. And in particular, in Make, I do really like the branching. The fact that you can filter data on your flow as well. So for example, whenever I get feedback for iOS Today, sometimes people will send in pet pictures for the pet tax, which is a non-obligatory tax where if people are sending in a question for Shortcuts Corner or show feedback, then they can send a pet picture as well and we show it on the show. But if they do that, then I need to upload that image to Dropbox so that I can get a public link so that I can put that in the show notes for the studio to then show during the show. And so I have a filter on that particular automation that handles all the feedback that we receive and puts it into Airtable for me that says, hey, if this has attachments, then go through the attachments, the image attachments specifically, upload these to a specific Dropbox folder for this email and create links for them and put the links back into Airtable for me. And then when I go to, you know, look at that feedback, I can see all the Dropbox links and I can just, you know, click one thing and copy everything and then paste it with the correct formatting straight into the Google Sheet for the show. And that makes my life a lot easier. The fact that I could just filter and say, hey, so keep going from here, but only if you've got attachments that are images. And that makes my life a lot easier for all the sorts of things that I'm doing that with.
Yeah. Well, I do think one of the challenges for people getting started with online automation is, you know, just choosing a service and which one do you start with? And like, you know, as you get deeper into it, you may use multiple services, but most people just want to master one to begin with. And that's what I was asking, because I feel like Make is probably the starting point at this point, but I don't know if This Then That is really easy and very visual. They've got more complex over the years. I mean, they've all kind of coalesced around the same principles and they're all building the same tools.
Yeah. Well, and Zapier has branching and paths and filters. And, you know, for me, Zapier was so much easier to learn. When I was first getting started, I had an Integromat account and I could not for the life of me figure that out. And it has been a real learning curve for me to figure out how to get in there and do stuff. I feel like it's more, to me, it feels more developer minded with some of the ways that they just phrase things with how you do things in Make versus Zapier was like, okay, you want to do that? What app do you want to plug into this thing? And what do you want it to do? So I felt like that was a lot easier for me. I mastered Zapier and then I started to hit the limits of that. And I felt this was permission from you guys. I remember one time there was an episode where David, you were talking about, like, think of it like your toolbox. You wouldn't just have one kind of you know, for your woodwork, you wouldn't just have one kind of chisel in there. You would have multiple different tools that you use. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that made me feel like, okay, I don't have to just do everything in one automation surface.
Yeah. And I do think you're right about make, like even like the name sequence, that's a developer term. That's not like a normal person term, you know?
But one of the things that I did struggle with a bit with Zapier is I was using, some of the automations or Zaps that I'd had in Zapier, they'd existed for a really long time. And usually if there's a new version of an action, then they'll like migrate it to the next version. So they'll take it from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. But I had some stuff that just literally couldn't be migrated for whatever reason. And I somehow missed the emails from them, I guess, about stuff changing. And the first thing I knew about it was a bunch of my automations broke. And I was like, oh no, this is not good.
Yeah, that's painful.
But fortunately, I've actually not had that issue with Make. And I have been using Make for a really long time. Some of the terminology is very developer-y, yes. But I do like the fact that on every action, there's a little question mark bubble when you click on. So you click on the bubble, the circle with the picture in it, and then it pops up, you know, the configuration for that in a little pop-up. And then you can click on the question mark on there and it'll open a help documentation for it. So if there's something in there that you don't understand, you know, where it's talking about exists or is in text or whatever for, you know, the filters, you can just click on the question mark and it'll pop open a documentation page, which actually explains how all the things work, because a lot of the time, you know, if there's odd words for things, that's come from the developer and that's just how they name things in their API or whatever. So it can be very much just like, you know, that you're just talking to the developer's API in a prettier format or something. But yeah, it's quite nice as well with, you know, it's got things like the text parsing and filtering and so on.
One thing that's really cool in Zapier, if you haven't played in it lately, they have added an AI right inside of Zapier. So before you're even starting a Zap, you can type into this thing and say, this is what I'm trying to do. And then it will try to build out the Zap based on what you're saying you want it to do. I don't use it for that because I know pretty much when I'm going in there what I want to do. But sometimes if there's not an option to do a particular thing that I want to do with an app, it allows you to do is type in to the AI and say, okay, I want to do this API thing, you know, pull this title from this Google Doc and then parse this out. And it will try to work with the API and basically create a little custom step for you that you can then use in your Zap, assuming it works and you've told it the right information. But I found that to be really cool because it basically lets me make API calls, which is not something I've been able to master, but without having to get that far down the rabbit hole of programming and development. One other thing I use that's kind of a cheat is I've not been able to figure out in Make how to get Make to watch an Airtable base for records that are updated only within a certain view. I'm sure it's possible, but I've not been able to figure it out. But I know exactly how to get that view that I want to be what Zapier monitors so that it only runs if there's a record that appears in that view. And so I'll start that in Zapier and I'll have it just fire a webhook off that goes over to Make to do the next steps. And it does the branching and all of that in Make. So that's a little bit of a hack that I use.
Yeah. That's one of the things that actually pushed me over to Make from Zapier previously, because I found that Zapier had a limitation on their Zaps where it would only run on an Airtable trigger once ever across all of your automations. So for example, for the podcast, we would have, you know, I wanted an automation when the record was first created and then when it appeared in this view and then when it appeared in that view. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do that because it would trigger once on the first one and then Airtable and then Zapier, to prevent you having the same automation just repeatedly triggering, would just store the ID of the record and be like, nope, we've already run automatically once on this, you're done. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, was I completely and utterly understand it. And I respect them for doing that because that makes a lot of sense to me, that they don't want something just running again and again and again and again on the same series of records, because that's not going to be good for them or good for anybody else. But it can be a little tricky. But the uh, Yeah, the good news is I think possibly since you last looked at it, Kim, the Make has updated their Airtable trigger for watch records, and there is now the option to filter for view, and you can even trigger for specific fields within that. So you can say, hey, you know, whenever new records appear, limit it to say 10, but they want to be in this view, and I want to, you know, look at this particular field, or even filter with a formula if you want to go crazy with it. Oh, yeah, but you can also just be keep it simple as well, which is nice. So
nice.
Well, I feel like this is an evolving part of automation, is the online tools, but they've come a long way. And just listening to the two of you talk, I think, Rose, we've probably got to come back and look at some of them again for the show, because there is a lot you can do with this. And like Kim's day job, you know, she's helping all these folks with their businesses. I'm guessing the businesses largely run on online services, and online automation is the key to that.
Yep.
Either way, Kim Kaloka Madden, thank you so much for coming on. We got through about 25% of the stuff you gave us for the show. So I guess that means we'll have to get you back someday. You can check out that website at kimkaloka.com, KIMCALOCA.com. Where else can people find you, Kim?
I'm on Instagram at Kim Kaloka Limited LTD. So those are pretty much the only two.
Okay, fair enough.
Nice.
Thank you to our sponsor today, and that's our friends over at ExpressVPN. We are the Automators. You can find us at relay.fm/automators. You can find the show has a website, if you didn't know, automators.fm. And at that website, we have a great forum, which I still go to find answers on the internet, and it points me to the forum for one of my podcasts. I love that, Rose. I love when it does that. Great community there. Oh, yeah. of like-minded automators. If you would like to further support the show, I encourage you to check out Automators Max. It's the ad-free extended version of the show. Today, we're going to talk about automation and neurodivergence. We've got a cool topic for the three of us to talk about, so we'd love to have you stick around for that. You can learn about that over at relay.fm/automators. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.